There's something I have to ask you.
May I ask you a question?
That is a question. Would you like to ask me another one?
Daniel and Donna Davis are the purveyors of Steam Crow, a neat little Arizona-based company that makes monsters. That's right, they draw monsters, invent their stories, and make products based on them. I stumbled across them at the San Diego Comic-Con last summer and was blown away by their colorful, whimsical booth. In a sea of licensed Star Wars and superhero memorabilia, here was someone successfully selling their own original creations, which, let me tell you, is no small feat. When I learned that this husband and wife team worked together and traveled to shows with their son, affectionately referred to as Goblin Boy, I knew I had to interview them. So today we have with us Daniel, one half of the team, and it's going to be a guys-only call because my wife Kim is also detained. So, Daniel, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
I'm good, and thanks for having me as well.
It is a total pleasure. Like I said, I this trip to Comic-Con was my first one this past summer.
Oh, congrats.
So, thank you. And it was awesome. My favorite part being having a background as an artist was looking at all the different artists. That was probably my favorite part. And so you guys were definitely one of my highlights, and I just really appreciated what you guys were all about and just thought it was really unique. Like I said, especially in a sea of Star Wars and superhero and Star Trek kind of things. So I have to start, I guess, with obvious questions.
Sure.
When and why did you start drawing monsters? How did it turn into a business? And then describe the scenario which you decided to leave your day job, which I believe was in the credit union industry. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then making the leap to doing that full time. Give me a little bit of a backstory.
All right, so just first off, you're going to have to, like, follow up with those other questions because my memory is, like, 52K, so...
No problem. Dial
so
up,
Yeah, exactly. I've been drawing monsters my whole life. It's been what I've been into since I could remember. Earliest memories of drawing things were pretty much always monsters and dinosaurs and all that. My mom was an amateur artist, a hobbyist that did, folk art and crafting, and she's a super cool creator herself, but she would copy a lot of stuff but the interesting thing was that she really was into animals, so she wanted me to be like a wildlife artist. And so it was constantly frustrating to her because I didn't want to draw a deer. I just was not interested in drawing a deer. And so I just always loved that stuff, and I think it comes from growing up in the 70s with monster culture being kind of real big in the 70s, early 70s, and watching Hammer films and The Munsters and Addams Family and eating Count Chocula. It was just everywhere, this kind of cartoony monster universe. So yeah, I don't know why. It always interested me, these creatures that were like people but had horns and fur and claws and fangs.
It strikes me as somewhat hilarious that you had a mom who wanted you to be a wildlife artist, because a lot of times you hear artists where their parents wanted them to be, doctors or engineers or get a real job, and here you have one that's like, I want you to be a wildlife artist, and still you have to go against what mom wants, you know?
Well, yeah, I should back up to say that my mom in no way wanted me to be an artist. She just knew that if I was going to draw, I needed to be drawing wildlife.
Gotcha,
so yeah,
gotcha.
She did not want me to be an artist.
Okay.
for a living, for sure, just because she knew that it was tough. So
sure. So how did this love for drawing monsters? Because it's unusual, you know. It's like it's very cool. But how did that turn into a business? How did it? And then obviously, how did it turn into a business where you could quit your day job?
Sure. So, basically, I've been kind of entrepreneurial my whole adult life. So I came from a band. Donna and I were both in bands in high school and college and post college. So I had a very DIY streak in me, like I learned that, gosh, I could do stuff myself. But I was also really easily distracted by the next thing around the corner. So I could never finish a project.
Okay.
I could start a million projects and not finish one. So then I met Donna, and that was awesome, and we dated and got married and all that. And then
she was in a band too, right?
Yep. Okay. She was a singer, a lot better singer than I was. I played bass guitar, and she sang and played rhythm guitar, and we were both in Spokane grunge bands, essentially. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know about the Spokane scene.
Yeah.
No one does. But so anyway, so I'd been doing my own T-shirts, and I had all these ideas for businesses, and I would pursue them to some degree, and then kind of they would sort of die off. I worked at a T-shirt shop, so I was going to start a T-shirt business, and then a toy store I wanted to do, and had all these interests, but not a lot of ability to follow through. So anyway, long story short, Donna and I decided to drag her to the San Diego Comic-Con. I'd been there one time before.
Okay.
And I said, hey, we should go to the Comic-Con, and it would be really fun. And she's like, yeah, is it going to be like the game stores that you drag me to? I'm like, yeah, but it's going to be that and a lot more. And, was that, what year was that? Donna just walked in the door. What year was that, Donna?
It was 2004.
Yeah, so 2004, I drag her down to San Diego and walk around. And, you know, it was great. We had a lot of fun. We started meeting all these indie artists, just like you're describing. You know, mm-hmm. We met all these people that were doing really cool stuff. And at one point, Donna leans over and goes, you know, you could do this. You could make an art book or a monster book, like a monster haiku book. And she said that because she knew that I loved doing monsters. And I was like, yeah? Because in my brain, up until that moment, I figured I did not have the magic. In this lifetime, I just did not have the magic to do this. The people that were at Comic-Con and tabling and had booths were magical people that had skills and abilities and talents that I did not have. So I just told myself that story and believed it. And then she kind of gave me permission. She's like, you know, you could do that. And I was like, nah. And I thought about it more. I'm like, hey, I like the idea. So by the time we had dinner that night, I was sketching ideas for the book, a monster haiku book. And we just started doing it. And then we went home. And in about, I think it was about 60 days, I had the book illustrated and finished.
Wow.
So, and some of the motivation, too, is that I'd been working in the credit union industry, and it's a great industry and all that, but it was pretty dry, and I'm a really creative guy, and I was dying in that, you know, and I'm just made to work. I'm made to work for myself. I'm really not made to work for other people.
I call myself unemployable, and it's the same thing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so... then it sort of began. So the idea was, man, we're going to print. Like, I got quotes for the printing of the books, and it was a huge, you know, huge amount of money. And but, you know, I believed in it 100%, and Donna believed in it. And so we applied for shows, because I knew that, you know, if we're going to print, you know, 1,000 books, 1,100 books, they're not going to sell themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So then a new kind of mechanism came into being, and that was sort of thinking about it as a business and not just a hobby. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that once I did a show or two that, you know, this was it. Like, I finally found my thing all the way. And so we had to make it successful. So a lot of indie folks, you know, webcomic or people or whatever you want to call them, you know, a lot of times you hear them, if you read, you know, on forums or whatever, you know, everybody's kind of best of is like, well, just breaking even. That's the best you could ever hope for, you know.
Like at a show?
I mean, it isn't true, but a lot of people think that way. Mm. You know, breaking even and you're doing better than most. And while that's true, breaking even is not a way to make it sustainable. So from the beginning, we were like, okay, we've got to make this work. Otherwise, you know, we're really wasting a lot of time and energy and effort. So then that kind of turned on the business side of things and started trying to think that way too.
So how long was it once you get that first book and started selling it? How long did it take for then you to get to a point where you're like, okay, I think I can do this full time?
Well, I hoped I could you know, from the beginning. Once I kind of bought into it, and buying into it really means believe that I could do it.
Yeah.
But it took a long time. It took six years of working full time on two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I worked 40 hours for my day job, and I worked the rest of the time, meaning 60 hours or whatever, however many hours I could get in, at Steam Crow.
Okay.
So yeah, it took 6 years of really going hard at it. I thought, man, if I just work really hard at this, I give this 100%, I could do it in 2 years. I believed that.
Yeah.
And I started interviewing people like Chris Grimley or Attaboy. So, you know, some alternative alt artists. And, you know, they're like, yeah, you're seeing me at 10 years.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's kind of how you have to be, though, because I remember when Kim and I started, we had high hopes, too, that it would be a lot quicker. And I think if you knew how long it would take when you started, it might be insurmountable to even begin. And so I think you need that beginner's enthusiasm to, like, get
sure.
you going, you know, and get some momentum going. But I think it's really cool, like, just a couple things to kind of track back on is how important it is to have that permission granter in your life. You know, like you said, you had that desire, you like drawing monsters, but for Donna to be able to say, you know, you could do this, like, it sounded like that was like the spark. That's all it took. It was someone else to give you the permission to go for it, and that is really cool and a good testament. And I think the other thing I that struck me about you when I met you is I saw you on the panel. It was something to do with art and business, I think, which is really interested me. And I thought you were probably the most, with all due respect, the most interesting person there, because you were really doing it full time, where some of these other guys who were talking were, it was like part-time jobs or they had other things they could rely on. And so I thought that was really cool. But yeah, the idea of it taking a while is something that I think people don't realize. But then also the thing with art, you know, there are no like obvious jobs for people that like art, but there are a lot of opportunities. You just have to look at it from a business perspective, which is actually pretty rare, but it's something that you guys seem to have done really, really well.
Yeah, you know, we're always working on it. You know, it's not an endless string of successes, but strategic, and you've got to fight some of those natural urges to, you know, make your art close to free. You've got to fight the urge to say yes to everything, you know?
Right, yeah. What was the moment where, was there a particular moment where a situation that you had where it was like, all right, this is going to work out. We're really doing this. This is, you know, was there a moment like that?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it's such a gradual thing. So, you know, we took it all in baby steps. So the first, yes, we could do it, was the first time that we did a show, you know, and at WonderCon 05, and I got more positive feedback from strangers than I'd ever had my whole life.
Hmm.
So one of them, but that was, you know, that was the first year, you know, and then, you know, the next one was, you know, this or that, you know, there's no real big, like, oh, we made it, see, you know.
We're here.
And also it just changes, you know, like the first time we made, you know, $1,000 at a show or something, you know, and that was like, wow, this is great. And now, you know, that could be seen as more of a failure moment.
Yeah.
But that all changes. So yeah, you're, like it or not, we're always shifting our success factors, you know, you're mm-hmm. always further out.
Yeah. And it's that what makes it cool to look back on then, to see what something that used to be really good is now, like you said, maybe a failure or not so good. And it's like, wow, that sometimes you don't realize how far you've come until you look back.
Sure, sure.
Now, Donna is also an art teacher. Is that right? She's still teaching?
Yeah, she's a great, she's a terrific art teacher.
Okay.
She's been for about 14 years now, I think.
Okay, so that adds a whole another dynamic of balance, because from the short conversation we had at the show, I got the impression that she goes to a lot, if not all of the shows with you, and a bunch of them Goblin Boy goes to. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then she,
yeah.
Yeah, and then she also does a lot of other duties with the business, right? It's not, I mean, because you're kind of like the main artist, but she also does a lot of order fulfillment and some creative stuff as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so how does this guy, that was probably the main reason I wanted to have you on this interview, is because like that adds a whole nother level of balance of, you know, between teaching, running a business, which is a double full-time job by itself, going to the shows, raising Goblin Boy. What tips do you have for balancing it all, and what kinds of things do you have to say no to? Because that's one thing that I think most people don't realize, is that balance doesn't mean you fit everything you ever want to do all in one life. It's like you kind of have to decide priorities and you have to say no to stuff. So how do you guys balance it? What are some tips that you might have for other people?
Well, we'll just start off with no again, like you just brought up. You know, you can't say yes to everything. And the more successful you become, the more opportunities in brackets come up. And there's, you know, endless things that seem like they would be great to do, but you know, you've just got to really pick and choose your battles on what you're going to spend your time doing. I'll just admit it. I personally am not great at balance, and so in a lot of ways, Donna is balance for me. So I'll go all over the topic here, but you know, like Donna is more conservative with risk, so that's a great. She's a great partner for me because we can. You know, she'll be like, well, let's not take the risk, and I'll be like, no, we got to do this, and I'll have to like come up with a good reason why we should do it, you know, sure. Instead of jump. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, like, we don't spend a lot of time just watching TV. You know, that's a choice, mm-hmm. And so we can get more things done, or you know, draw more. Like Donna loves drawing, so. And painting, and so the more she watches TV, the more she can't draw. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of just the micro choices that you continuously make, you know, to make things work. But yeah, I don't know that I'm a great example of excellent balance. Sometimes I just have to throw myself into stuff to get it done.
Well, I think the point you make about having someone who can balance you out, I think that's a big key. If you're probably both in the one direction, it wouldn't work, right? It's like whether if you're both too conservative or both all over the board, it's probably a recipe for disaster either way. So like what advice would you have for couples who are thinking about starting a business together? Because yeah. People ask Kim and I all the time, and a lot of people like Chuss are like, I don't know how you could stand to be around each other all the time, and I could never do that. And I always thought that was weird, because I'm like, Kim's my best friend. Like I like spending time with her, and we enjoy working on this together, especially since it's such a passion for us. But what advice would you have for couples who are like, okay, could we do this? Should we do this? How could this work?
Thing that I felt struck from the very beginning was that this was a partnership project. This couldn't be Daniel's project. That's why it's called Steam Crow and not DanielDavis.com, you know, because it's both of us spending a lot of time, or it would be me spending a lot of time on the road and her and the family and stuff. So I think that was number one, is to make sure that, you know, something we both agreed to do and could do together. Mm-hmm. So to about it. The other is to, you've got to make a ton of choices with one another. And so again, balancing each other out to try to, to make good choices, to have somebody to fall back on, to give other feedback. I mean, for me, Donna looks at every single piece of art I do, every single thing. And she is pretty patient in that, you know, hey, come on over to my computer. What do you think of this? She's heard that question a million times, but she still comes and gives me feedback. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that she's involved with too that, you know, people don't necessarily see. But back to the advice thing, you know, I mean, I get real practical and go, you know, like, you've got to plan things out well in advance. I don't know. There's lots. I could answer probably more specific questions.
Well, I think that's a good overview. I want to talk a little bit. I want to talk, not that this wasn't fun, but I want to talk about some even more fun stuff. Halloween. It's with a company all about monsters, it's no surprise you guys both have an affinity for Halloween. What is it about Halloween that you like so much?
Well, I love, you know, again, I love monsters. The fact that when I was a little kid, you know, I'm sure somebody pulled me aside at some point and goes, so what are you going to be for Halloween? I'm like, what's that? And they're like, well, it's this time of year. Put on a costume and you walk around and strangers give you candy. That's like the greatest thing ever. So I love that. I love the fact that you're exploring your neighborhood. You're knocking on the doors of your neighbors. Like, you know, I don't know very many of my neighbors here, sadly, but at least Halloween's a chance for me to have a friendly face in front of those people, you know? And I also love Halloween, and I think a lot of times Halloween is kind of being sort of demonstrated as like the murder holiday. And gore and I don't see it that way at all. So for me it's still pretty innocent and spooky ghosts and goblins kinds of stuff. So I love that aspect of it, the kind of spooky but you know, not going to stab you in the eye sort of thing. So right. So that's one of my, well, one of our kind of secret agendas with Steam Crow is to try to promote Halloween as Halloween again. So that's why we started that Teen Halloween event this year.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. This was your first year doing this, is Keen Halloween. Tell me about it. What was the inspiration? How did it go?
Oh, it went really great. We did it on a shoestring, shoestring budget even for time. But we really wanted to make great memories for people. We wanted to get people involved in their own Halloween again. And so we really kind of promoted a do-it-yourself agenda. So we had workshops so people could help make their Halloween better. We had Evil Genius Costume Bar where people could come and ask experts with costuming, you know, hey, I want to make this kind of costume. What would you do for these wings? And they could get some expert advice. We had vendors that aren't, you know, Chinese-made products, but rather great design or vintage design or a cool aesthetic for monstery goods. And then entertainment. So we had entertainers that you know, practiced family friendly but cool, spooky sort of stuff. So yeah, it was great. And where it came from was, we've known that Halloween was really important to us, but we sort of had to take a step back and go, hey, you know, every October we're invited to do a ton of things at different people's stores and shops and places, but they were always someone else's events. And while those were great little events, we really didn't make any fans. We didn't make a spectacle. We didn't really affect people in the way that we wanted to, because a lot of times it was just show up at our store and do a signing. Well, that doesn't do much. That's not us doing anything. It's just us behind a table. So we wanted to, we took all those things off the calendar for this year and said, listen, let's do one great thing so that we can do Halloween the way we want to do it and make a show, a party, a celebration of Halloween the way Steam Crow does it. So anyway, that was really successful, and we're really looking forward to doing it again.
That's cool. I thought it's really cool that mission to kind of take back Halloween, because it has gotten to be a little bit too violent, and well, even just some of the costumes for women. I mean, it's just sort of comical. I saw a picture the other day of a body bag costume, and they had a guy's one and a girl's one, and the guy's one looked like a body bag when you could see the guy's face, and the girl's one was like barely more than a swimsuit, and it was like, how is that a body bag? I don't understand that, but I really liked the nostalgic kind of call to bring Halloween back to how it was. I'm curious, what were some of the workshops that you had?
How to do sugar skull face painting. That was a really cool one, and that's big here since we're in the Southwest. We definitely bring in a big Day of the Dead sort of influence. Another workshop was it was sort of entertainment slash workshop, but it was a we had a Iron Skull costume challenge. So we had three teams, and we gave each team a bag full of common household stuff like seven glue sticks, hot glue sticks, and a glue gun, and some duct tape, and a plastic bag, and all this junk, and they had to make a costume live on stage in 5 minutes. So the idea was that with that is, hey, if you only have a weekend to make a costume, look what these people could do, look what they did in just 4 or 5 minutes. Other workshops, how to make a poison apple crate. That was pretty cool. So decoration. Tombstone, how to make pro props with EPS foam. That was another one. There was a zombie, how to do zombie makeup. There was one about how to do how to host a Halloween dinner party with a menu and decorations and everything. So yeah, that stuff in particular was really, really good. So we're going to continue to really push and develop that workshop side.
That's awesome. Now, I know you have a website. Do you have the Keen Halloween website? Does that have a lot of the kind of tips and things for people, ideas that you could pick up that people who weren't able to be there could learn from?
No, it doesn't. Not yet. Yeah.
It's a work in progress. It's one thing at a time, right?
Yeah, that would be terrific to do. Doing that show nearly killed me. we'll definitely get some more help this next year and get it further along. We definitely had some help, but we should have started much earlier. So.
Well, I look forward to seeing how it grows. I think it's such a cool idea, and wish you the best on that. I have two last questions. What was your most memorable Halloween costume from your childhood?
Oh, probably the first time I must have been 4 or 5, I got to be something more scary because my mom had me, we'll do you up as a clown or whatever. That's scary. So I got to be a pirate one time. These costumes, and she had these clip-on earrings, like a clip-on earring with a big metal ball that must have weighed 5 pounds. I was going to die. But I got to be the scruff that's made out of coffee grounds and Vaseline, on my face and whatever. That was really great. And then, oh, hello.
No, go ahead. You're good.
Later, I really got into vampires, Dracula. So I was a Dracula for 6 years in a row, before they were all sparkly and stuff.
And finally, we'll talk candy. What would be the worst and the best kind of candy that could possibly land in your trick or treat bag?
I don't really like. I think the hard candy, what do you call those yellowy hard
butterscotch ones?
They taste okay. That would be kind of pretty boring though. I like chocolate, so I'd rather have something a lot better. Like a candy cane, pretty lame, I guess, because then you'd know it was just really old from the year before.
Uh huh.
Received best. I don't know. I mean, I love just chocolatey Payday and black licorice, like the Black Crows, Old Crow. Chocolate licorice candy, that's pretty good. I don't know,
all kinds of stuff. What about those circus peanuts? What's your take on those?
I'm gonna eat those. No, I don't like those. Those are not made for eating.
I don't think so. Better for doorstops, I think. All right, Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed our chat. I think our listeners will as well. Anyone listening needs to hightail it to steamcrow.com because you need to check out the awesome art that we've been talking about. Thank you again so much for taking the time to chat. Please give our best to Donna, and I really appreciate it. It's been a great pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
Okay, Daniel, take care.
Bye.
Bye.